this anyway, just for kicks. Sam.
Well, good evening. It is Sunday, February 16th. I am a day behind getting this episode recorded, episode 4 of the Tales from the Air podcast. So excited that you joined us. My name is Rob Johnson. You can find this podcast and many others on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And I really want to thank those that reached out regarding the last episode where I went into a little detail, timely detail, on the unfortunate crash that occurred in Washington. And we'll have an update on that at the end of today's episode from some information that I gathered from the National Transportation Safety Board. So today's episode is going to be what the previous episode was going to be. We're going to get back into that. It's that post-security and boarding process, what that looks like, and go into some best practices, some stories, some suggestions on what to do, what not to do, things of that nature. So very excited to delve into it. Before I do want to remind folks that Real ID takes effect on May 7th, 2025, not far away at all. I did get my driver's license renewed towards the end of January. Is when I went in and did it here in the state of Kansas. Did not take long at all, and I was able to get my license fairly quick. What I would recommend you do is check with your state on what additional ID is required to get the real ID. Some may need a passport or a birth certificate, or a social security card. Every state's gonna be a little different on that, with that requirement. So check with your state before you go in, and hate to have you waste a trip and not have the right documentation. So with that, let's delve right into the subject at hand. I will tell you, my dogs are being a little wild this evening, so don't know what's going to happen with all that. We're going to try to make it through the entire podcast without a bunch of barking and obnoxiousness from them, but one never knows. They may weigh in. So we've made it through security, if you think back to episode 2, and hopefully your Sam's Club size bottle of shampoo wasn't confiscated, or you didn't have to slam down your caramel macchiato that you had to have when you entered the airport prior to going through security. And you're on the other side of security now, and you're trying to get your bearings on where you head to, where your gate is, and what's next. So let's talk a little bit about that. If you are like me, not necessarily something I would recommend, but if you're like me and you don't leave a lot of time to spare once you've gotten through security until you board, and again, if you're not a frequent traveler, I would not recommend that. I give yourself a little buffer, but everyone's going to find their own comfort level as they do this. Now, keep in mind, some of you listening to this podcast may fly once every other year. You may fly two or three times a year. And that's it. So it's not as big a deal for you, because you're probably going to leave a little extra time just because you want to make sure nothing goes wrong and you kind of plan for those unexpected events. But if you're kind of right on that edge where you're not a road warrior, but you know your way around, you kind of find that level of comfort for you in terms of the lead time you want going into prior to boarding. Now, some of you may have a routine that you have, and depending upon your airport, there may be some amenities you'd like to take advantage of before you board. There may be a particular coffee shop you enjoy, or something of that nature. Airports have made significant investments in airport amenities over the last number of years, and it's something that they're really trying to be mindful of as they remodel or build new airports to make sure that they're able to meet a lot of the needs that travelers have spoken that they want to see once they get on that other side of security. The other option that some people have as well is looking at airport lounges and clubs, and then also some airports will have partnerships with, say, American Express, and they'll have an American Express club, or some will have clubs that aren't tied to an airline or a specific group, and you literally pay for each time that you go. And we'll get into those here in a little bit. But for some that quite aren't there with having the clubs, what they have done is they've tried to carve out some areas for business travelers where they may be able to go get a desk for an hour, or even a small enclosed area if you need to have a call or a video call. Hell, you could even do a podcast from those areas if need be. So, point being, a lot of amenities in these airports and things have changed quite a bit. Sorry for the voice there. I am probably coming down with something. My wife had us out in the sub-zero temperatures this morning running a 5K. I walked a 1.5K, I think, but she did the 5K. So apologize if my voice gets a little gravelly or changes octaves in the podcast. A little sip of soda there. So going into kind of your comfort level, again, I have it fairly well timed out. I'm able to get through security. I'll go grab a cup of coffee, depending upon what the line looks like. And probably 70% of the time, I would say, at my gate, they're starting to board or they're lining up to board when I arrive. Now, that is what I do. You may not have that level of comfort and want to cut it that close, but that's typically where I land. I will tell you it's been an adjustment because Kansas City recently built a new airport and it took a little time to kind of navigate those waters with the timing. The old airport, not a lot of amenities, in fact, very few amenities once you got through security. And so it made it a little more, in my opinion, challenging because you might cut it a little closer than you possibly should. But at any rate, one area I did want to address, I should have probably talked about it in the previous episode, but definitely fitting here as well. If you have someone or if you yourself need wheelchair assistance, that's something that's really going to get initiated at the ticket counter. A number of people will let folks know when they book their ticket, but in terms of the real communication, it really starts at the ticket counter. They're able to get someone who can assist you, push you to your gate if you're by yourself, or with someone who can't push you. if you have someone who can, that's fine. You can sure do that. And then they'll also coordinate when you land, making sure there's a wheelchair available, whether you're laying over or your final destination. So good communication there, and they'll get you taken care of. One thing to consider, so many of these airports today, the walk from the ticket agent, ticket counter where you check your bags to your gate is extremely long. So if you have even the slightest mobility issues, it may be worth it to get a wheelchair and get that ride so you don't have to wear yourself out getting to the gate. So something to consider. A lot of people, I think, feel as though they have to meet a certain criteria to get a wheelchair. Really, it's for those who have the need and have possibly some respiratory or mobility issues and need that help. So, at any rate, one of the themes throughout this podcast is going to be, I say listening, but really it's just paying attention and understanding that things can change in the snap of a finger. And if you recall in the podcast episode 2, I talked about you kind of have to relinquish a little bit of control once you get to the airport because so much of what happens is not in your hands. And what I mean by that is you're going to want to be an active listener. You're going to want to check your phone periodically. The airlines have, through their apps, they'll have notifications on updates. If there's delays or a gate change or cancellation. So you want to really be mindful of that. Other options that you can look at, it's one that I do, is, and I can't speak for non-iPhones, but if you have an iPhone, you're able to text the airline code and the flight number to yourself and then get updates on your flight. It's the airline designator code, which is two alpha characters. You can Google that and see what the airline code is, but by refreshing that, that will get you the latest and greatest info on your flight. Another app that I like to use is an app called FlightAware. What I like about FlightAware is you are able to even look at previous flights that day with your flight number and see if there was a delay that will possibly affect your flight. So it's a tool that I've used for a while now, and I enjoy looking at that information and just an extra resource that you can kind of keep yourself up to speed on. So as I mentioned earlier, everybody has their own patterns, their own things they like to do before they board the plane. For some people, it's heading straight to the gate, getting a seat, and they're intently waiting to hear that they're getting ready to board the flight. Some people will pick up a bite to eat, they'll grab a magazine or a newspaper and kind of migrate over to the gate at their leisure. Some folks like to hit the restroom before boarding. Everybody's a little different in what their routine looks like. What I will tell you, as I mentioned earlier, with the clubs, that changes that dynamic a little bit too. And personally, I will tell you, I don't like it. When I did have access to a club, I loved it. But now that I don't, and if my flight's delayed or what have you, or if it's a long layover, I will try to find an empty gate nearby so I can kind of stretch out a little bit and I'm not sitting right on top of someone. I always tend to be at the gate where you have people talking loudly on their cell phones and there's kids running wild and you have couples complaining about this, that, and the other. And it's like, I don't want to hear any of that. So personally, if I can avoid that as much as I can, I try to. The gates, again, just like the airport amenities, they've done a better job with more seating and having it to where you're not sitting right on top of one another in most cases. I feel like they've done a little bit better job with that, but it still sometimes can be a little challenging and frustrating when you're sitting at the gate. But I do want to talk a little bit about the airline clubs. I think that it's one of those things that the airlines felt like they really needed to have something to address their frequent travelers to make that experience better, so people would stick with that airline and be loyal. And so you had all these programs tied to points and you know, then the credit card partnerships and all that. And at the very end of the day, the clubs really are a great way, especially if you're a frequent traveler, to relax, maybe get a little work done, but have some amenities where it's a little bit more personalized and you don't feel like you're sitting on top of one another like sometimes you are at the gate. Personally, I find it very relaxing. I enjoy being able to drop my bags off in an area where I'm going to sit. Typically, there's a movable table or an area where you can set your stuff on and do some work or set some food on. And you're able to just kind of take a breath and relax. What I really enjoy too is if you're flying by yourself and you need to run to the restroom, you leave your bags right there. And you can do that. You don't have to worry about, like when you're at the gate, picking up your stuff, taking it with you and all that. So it can be a really pleasant experience. The other thing about the clubs that I find really nice is they'll oftentimes have staff there who are being very diligent with tracking the flights. So if there's a gate change or if it's boarding, they'll make that announcement in the club so you're up to date on what's going on so you can kind of focus on other things. The downside to the clubs, and it's not just the airline clubs, it's the clubs that are tied to the credit cards and all that, because they've become so popular and grown, they can get crowded. And that can be a challenge. That can be as frustrating. I know here recently, I've passed by, and I won't mention the airline on this episode, maybe a future episode I will, but you go by and you see a line of 25, 30 people waiting outside to get in. Well, at that stage, I would almost rather just go grab a Starbucks and find a gate that isn't quite as crowded close by to my gate and have a seat instead of standing in line waiting to get into the airline club. And by the time I get in, I may have 10 minutes before I have to go to my next flight. So, you know, that can be challenging. I know some of the airlines are trying to address the overcrowding issue by increasing the criteria for what it takes to be able to go into those clubs, whether it be cost or whether it be other things. So, you know, they're looking into that for sure. The other thing to consider with the clubs is that return on investment. If you are lucky enough to get your employer to pick up that tab, more power to you. That's great. I've yet to have an employer be willing to pick up that tab. So that is something that I have not been able to negotiate in the past. But when you look at that ROI, some of those club memberships can approach $800 annually, if not more. So if you're not traveling a lot, it does not make sense to be a member of that club if you're paying for that out of pocket. Now, if it's a perk that's given to you, great. Take advantage of it, use it when you can. But if you're paying for it out of pocket, I'm not sure I'm going to spend that kind of money if I'm only flying 6 or 7 times a year. That's probably not going to be worth it to me. Now, if I'm a road warrior and I am in the air 2-3 times a week, then yeah, I might consider being part of that and you know, joining one of those clubs and taking advantage of those amenities. The other thing you're able to do as a member in many cases is bring a guest for an additional fee, typically not very much, $40 in some cases, which can be worth it. And so we'll do episodes solely on the different clubs and different types in a future episode. But another club I do want to mention, and I mention it mainly because we just had one open in Kansas City, and I think we're going to see them more and more. It's a pay-per-visit lounge, and these lounges are not affiliated with any airline or with any credit cards. They literally are set up to where you can book your time. The price does vary based on the time of the day. The more popular times during the day, like an early morning or things like that, are going to be a little bit more expensive. But these lounges could be a perfect alternative if you're not flying all that often, but you want to have take advantage of some of those amenities and you want to check it out occasionally. I've got a flight coming up here in a week. I probably will not take advantage of it on that trip, but I have a trip coming up after that towards the end of March where I may take advantage of it and check it out and report back on what I saw and some of the different amenities within. But I think we're going to see more of those popping up because you, again, on the airline specific lounges, if you typically, we'll use Delta as our example, if you typically fly Delta, but you're flying Southwest on this particular flight, you can't use the Delta Club. You have to have a ticket for that airline for that day to be able to take advantage of that. So something to be mindful of, especially if you kind of bounce between 2 or 3 airlines, you want to consider that. If you're loyal to one, no matter what, then obviously that puts you in a different consideration. So I'm going to take a breath here, a sip of soda. Probably should be drinking some Gatorade or water, but I'm not doing that this evening. So let's talk a little bit about delays and cancellations. Folks, delays and cancellations are inevitable. I fortunately have had very few cancellations in my flying years, but I've had them. And it's can be really challenging depending upon where you're going and what time of day it is. It can really be a challenge, but they do come up. And I want to give you some best practices and tell you a couple stories on that. First and foremost, I think it's important to remember you're going to get a lot more flies with honey than vinegar, if you've ever heard that adage. Essentially, what I'm saying is if you're screaming and yelling at the airline employees over a delayed flight or a canceled flight, it's not going to get you your destination any faster. In fact, it could make things worse if things get escalated. So my advice is be patient, be calm, and speak to the airline staff as you would like to be spoken to. They don't like the fact they're having to deal with the delays and cancellations. That's probably one of the worst parts of their job, is having to address those and find solutions. Having someone screaming at them isn't helping. So, you know, you really want to approach those types of situations and be calm and speak as you'd like to be spoken to, is really the best way I can say it. You want to look at options in those situations. And what I mean by that is, even a delay, if you're changing planes somewhere, could impact your final destination. So I feel as though the airlines do a really good job of trying to identify those people who could be impacted by such a delay, where they're going to miss their connecting flight. But be mindful of that. Look at that and make sure that you're not at risk for missing that connection. Also, look at different airlines possibly as an alternative. If a flight gets canceled, it may get canceled due to staffing issues. It could get canceled because of a mechanical reason. If that's the case, is there another airline you could fly to get you to your destination? It could cost you a little more on the front end, but you can work to recoup those dollars on the back end. So be open to different airlines, different times, even a different route. There's been many a times I have flown where I was traveling, and again, I'm going to use Delta as an example. As I've mentioned before, I fly Delta and Southwest more than any other airline. Not taken away from the others, that's just been based on my destinations and the type of travel I've been doing, the two that I've frequented the most. But with Delta, there may be occasions where I'm slotted to change planes in Minneapolis, but there's a flight going out in an hour going through Detroit, and it may get me to my final destination just an hour and a half later than I was originally scheduled to land. I got to tell you, I'd much rather land an hour and a half later than not get there at all. So just be open to different ideas and the different options that are out there. Now, one thing I will tell you, if there is a delay, and it's a long delay, I would be very cautious on leaving the airport in a delay. And I say that for multiple reasons. One, you could get hung up once you leave the airport doing something and you're delayed getting back to the airport, which can be problematic. The second thing is, there could be a change to that schedule to where all of a sudden that 4-hour delay is now an hour and a half, and you're off somewhere having pizza because you're in a city you're familiar with and you want to go get pizza or barbecue, and you miss your flight because you can't get back to the airport in time and you don't make it. So I would encourage you to stay at the airport when you have a long delay like that. Unless it's a really long delay, then you can kind of try to work something out. But even then, I would be very cautious on potentially leaving the airport. And I know by even mentioning leaving the airport for a delay struck fear into some listeners, because they would never even think about that. That would send them into a panic. So at any rate, the other thing is, when you have a cancellation, you want to get a hold of reservations, the 800 number. In addition to getting in line to speak to an agent, Some of you may be scratching your head saying, why am I doing both? Well, the reason you want to do both is you may get a hold of someone on the phone while you're waiting in line, and they can solve your issue for you, and you step out of line, and you go do what you need to do, and you're on your way. In some cases, the reservation agent is going to say, the staff at the airport's going to have better visibility into what's happening, so you want to get in line. Well, if you wait to get in line to take that direction, you're now probably in the back of the line, and your option may not be a good option anymore. So my advice would be get a hold of the reservation line and wait in line simultaneously. Now, if you're traveling with someone else and they're able to get on the phone and stay seated and you want to hop in line, you can sure do that. But if you're traveling by yourself, that's one of the things that I would recommend. The other thing that I think is important as it relates to delays and cancellations is understand your rights as a passenger. The Department of Transportation has done a really good job putting together it's a dashboard with your rights. But if you go out to the U.S. Department of Transportation website and go to the consumer rights section, it really does lay out what the airlines are responsible for, what you're responsible for. It gives you a really good sense. I think there's a lot of people today that assume things are going to fall on their plate, but actually it's the airlines and vice versa. So you just want to have a good sense of who's responsible for what and what rights you have as a passenger. So we'll leave behind delays and cancellations, and we're going to move to boarding and some things to consider there. And what to think about. Oh yeah, by the way, on the leaving the airport during a delay, I have missed a flight due to not being able to get back in time. So you want to think that through before you leave the airport. Okay, so back to boarding. I think probably one of my biggest pet peeves when flying is to see people who are boarding way down the line, standing up and blocking areas where people need to walk through to be able to board. You have people who I don't know if they're anxious. I don't know if they think that they're going to lose a spot. I don't know what it is, but they could be in boarding group 5 and they are standing up with boarding group 1, and it creates unnecessary chaos because the more people that congest that area, the tougher it is to get people through to scan their ticket and get them on the plane. So my recommendation is if your boarding group has not been called, stay seated, stay out of that area. If you want to stand and be close, I think that's fine. Just kind of be off to the side a little bit and don't congest that area. Probably one of the challenges with that is people don't want to check a bag. And so people rush to be first within their boarding group so they can get their bag onto the plane. Because once they reach a certain point and overhead space is filled, they start checking bags. So unless it can fit under your seat, it's getting checked. That could be part of the reason. I don't know. But I will tell you, you want to do yourself a favor. If you're in one of those later boarding groups, assume you're going to have to check your bag. Pull your medicine out. Pull out a laptop. Put it in your other bag that's going to go under your feet or under the seat in front of you by your feet. And those bags, they're not going to charge you for those bags to go on. I think that's a common misconception they're going to charge you for that, and they don't. Oftentimes, some airlines will even, if they see a lot of roller bags amongst the people getting ready to board, they'll even make some announcements saying, if you're the later boarding groups, come on up. We'll check your bag right now. They'll try to get ahead of it a little bit because they know it's coming. They know that those overhead bins are going to fill up. So, anyway, something to think about as you're boarding. I will tell you on the flip side of all that, if you're boarding early, if you're in boarding group one and you get on the plane, there's no one else back in coach, or very few people in coach. Don't be that person that puts their roller bag and their backpack and their jacket in the overhead compartment. You're taking up space for other roller bags. You're delaying the boarding process. And that's really where, honestly, it's on both ends where a lot of the delays happen. I can't tell you how many times I have seen someone get on the plane, and it doesn't matter. Male, female, young, old, they will get on the plane. They'll stick their backpack up above and their jacket and sit down, put on their headphones, and they're lost. And then, as the people towards the end are trying to board and they're trying to figure out whose jacket is this, whose backpack, and it's chaotic. So, a best practice is don't do that. Now, I will tell you with jackets, once everyone has boarded, I will stick it up there around the suitcases, and I think that's fine. But to have it take up space where a suitcase could go, yeah, not recommended. So, at any rate, that concludes this piece of the podcast. I do want to tell you the next episode, we're going to cover the flight itself, good etiquette. Also have some stories in there with that. That will be on March 1st. But as usual, I do want to touch base on a couple industry-related items. I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I was going to give you an update from the NTSB. They held a press conference on Friday afternoon, and there were a couple items in there that were very noteworthy. One is in a review of the data, they believe there's a strong possibility that the Black Hawk helicopter did not receive the entire transmission from the air traffic control tower to go behind the American Airlines jet. Based on their initial analysis, and there's more to do, so by no means is this final, but it appears as though they stepped on the mic in the Black Hawk helicopter stepped on the mic during that transmission, and part of that transmission was missed. So that definitely could be a factor. The other item I wanted to mention is the crew of the Black Hawk helicopter was most likely wearing night vision goggles at the time of the accident. They were doing a check flight, and one of the components of that particular check flight was night vision goggles. So they think that they were being worn at the time. Now, keep in mind that NTSB is still conducting their investigation, and you are able to check that out with the latest info at ntsb.gov if you want to check that out. And we'll continue to update you as information becomes available and when that initial report is released, which could be at the end of February, towards the 1st of March, right in that range. And then from a another perspective in the industry side, which I thought was kind of interesting. Southwest Airlines has started flying some red-eye flights from the West Coast to the East Coast. They started with five, Vegas, LAX, and Phoenix, one each to Baltimore Washington Airport. Vegas has a flight to Orlando, an overnight red eye, and then finally LAX to Nashville. There's a flight, and I'll tell you why that's interesting is on Southwest going from the West Coast east. Oftentimes, the latest you can get a flight is 5:30, maybe 6 p.m. at the very latest. With this change, so for example, this LAX to Nashville flight, conceivably, you could fly LAX to Nashville and then Nashville to Kansas City on that first flight out of Nashville that next morning, and you're in Kansas City much earlier than you would be otherwise if you took the first flight out of LA to Kansas City. So good to have options. So interested to see how that goes. Most airlines have been doing red eyes for a while. I've taken two red eyes in my life. I've got a good friend, and she's going to be a guest of the show here coming up here. I'm thinking in May we'll have her on. But she loves red eye flights from the west to the east because she can get some sleep and she doesn't feel like it takes away her whole day. So there's people that love them. I will tell you, I'm not a huge fan. I don't sleep well on planes, and I'm a morning person anyway, so it's not ideal for me, but when they're needed, they sure are nice. So last thing, gonna tease a couple of future episodes. Going to interview my 100-year-old aunt, who she has traveled the world and just has some interesting insights. My wife Lisa is going to join me on that interview. We're going to be visiting her at some point in the month of March, and we'll conduct that interview. So excited to bring that to you. I think you'll find it interesting. And then also, we're going to do an episode on cruises. And we're going to talk to an expert on cruising and get her thoughts on all things in the cruise industry. So that should be an interesting episode as well. Look forward to bringing that one to you. So with that being said, thank you so much for joining and listening to the podcast. Appreciate your feedback. Feel free to email me at talesfromtheair@gmail.com. Would love your feedback and questions. And we're going to talk to you again on March 1st. And we're going to have Mr. Dwight Yoakam, as he has the last number of episodes, bring us home. Dwight, take it away.
She pulled off on a state route just north of Charlotte.